Hello, muchachos. Do you like free things? Do you like free podcasts? You do? We do too. Is this podcast free? Sort of. I mean, you're listening to it and you didn't pay anything for it, but you could through support. You can go to arthouse43.com. You can click on support or donate and you can make some sort of a contribution. Or, and this is important, you should listen up to this, or you can go to iTunes and write us a review. Why? Because it's as good as gold. The more reviews we get, the more visibility we get, and then maybe the better sponsors we get. I don't know. I mean, it's like the Bitcoin of change for podcast. You can also follow us on social media at ArtHouse43 everywhere. You could share it. You could tell your friends about it and then go along your merry way. All right. Are you ready to Blade Runner yourself? Let's Blade Runner ourselves together.
Every civilization was built off the back of a disposable workforce. But I can only make so many. Shh. Happy birthday.
There is an order to things.
That's what we do here. We keep order.
The world is built on a wall that separates kind. Tell either side there's no wall, you bought a war.
You're a cop. I had your job once. I was good at it.
I know.
What do you want?
I want to ask you some questions. The key to the future is finally unearthed.
Bring it to me.
They know you're here.
I always told you, you're special. Your story isn't over yet. There's still a page left.
The world view is breathtaking, from the sort of gray vistas of bleak cityscapes, rusty-colored industrial wreckage, a kind of eco-collapsed world. On the sheer visual sense of the film, you sit there and marvel at it. That's Mark Kermode of Kermode & Mayo's film review on BBC Radio 5. It's a podcast. You can listen to it. It's a great show. Mark Kermode is, he's like, if Siskel and Ebert merged into one, if they were still alive, and then they merged into one and they became Mark Kermode, except like the British version of it. He's really good. Anyway, welcome to Art House Radio. I'm your host, as always, Troy Ramos, and this host saw Blade Runner 2049 a couple days ago, and I was blown the fuck away. If you haven't seen it yet, firstly, you probably need to stop this podcast because there are going to be spoiler alerts. You can always come back to it after you see it, or if you don't give a fuck, you can keep listening. I don't even know where to begin, because this movie, it's almost like this movie, the director listened to my podcasts about my dystopia, my fixation on having us get destroyed by technology, living in some sort of rubble infested wasteland, dystopia and everything, and then made a movie off of my rants, because that's pretty much what you're seeing. If you don't remember the original Blade Runner, it's the prequel to this movie from 1982 with Harrison Ford. It's set in LA. It's 1982, so it's set in the future in 2019. So a couple years from now, if you're listening to this currently in 2017, the settings for the two movies are kind of the same. You know, it's dark. In 82, it's lots of rain, tons of rain, neon lights, big architecture, darkness. That movie was directed by Ridley Scott and loosely based on Philip K. Dick's book. Excuse me, Mr. Dick's book. You have a call. Paging Mr. Dick's book. Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? That's the book that the movie was based on. And I haven't read that, and I believe that I should, because it sounds fucking awesome. The story of Blade Runner, really quickly, is that men, I assume it's men, it's always men causing problems, right? Created smart androids called replicants, some of whom revolted. And so these cops, a branch of cops called Blade Runners, were hired to kill them. Replicants were given generally, I think, like 4-year lifespans and banned from Earth. And the replicants who rebelled or revolted went on killing sprees of humans. And the movie sort of confronts big questions about what does it mean to be human? What will technology do to us? Will technology save us from technology, or is it going to destroy us altogether? It's, let me see if I can find a quote. If you remember at the end of Blade Runner 1982, which I'm sure you do, one of the replicants says to Harrison Ford, "I've seen things you people wouldn't believe," in this really weird alien sense. You know, like you don't even know what's out there. You don't even understand what the possibilities are. Like, you're just a human. You don't understand. We're so much better than you. We're so much faster. I mean, you're listening to this probably on your phone. That device is a million times smarter than we are if intelligence is based on processing information. I mean, there's no way we can compete with computers, right? And that's sort of what this movie is about. It's about, I mean, in Blade Runner 2049, it's also dealing with social hierarchy. I mean, that's a definite theme. Because you get the sense, just like in Elysium, and I'm about to go on a nerd alert, Elysium, I think it was, with Matt Damon, where, you know, in the future they can fix anything, any disease, any ailment you have, they can fix it. If you can afford to get into one of the machines, it's just like, you know, today, we have a great healthcare system, but not many people can afford it. You have to go through insurance companies, and I don't know how they afford it either. Well, gouging people, that's one way. But you see that social hierarchy in Blade Runner 2049 as well. And I think it's there in the original, the prequel in 1982. I'm not sure. I have to go back and watch that again. But one of the things that I think Blade Runner 2049, and there are going to be some spoiler alerts here, but I'm not going to talk forever about stuff. I'm not going to replay the movie. Oh, this is one scene where, like, I think this movie is about identity. Just sort of like in Blade Runner in 1982 with Harrison Ford's character, Deckard. Is Deckard a replicant? Is he a human? Ridley Scott at the time, I believe, said he was a human. But then I feel like Denis Villeneuve, the director of this movie, Blade Runner 2049, kind of feels like, well, okay, that's possible. But maybe he is something different. Maybe he's part replicant. Maybe he doesn't know, which is sort of Westworldian, if you know that HBO series, of thinking that you're a human, but actually you're just another robot. That's the same thing that's happening in this movie, in 2049, with Ryan Gosling. And by the way, can I just say this? Is there anything Ryan Gosling can't do? I mean, fuck all. This guy, I'm not one for men, but this guy is talented. Let me tell you. He's Hans Zimmer, too. What music. You will watch this movie, and if you're paying attention, you almost want to stand up at times and be like, is this really happening? Are we seeing this artwork happen, unfold slowly through talking pictures at me? I mean, it's amazing. Do you remember Interstellar in the movie theater? You didn't see Interstellar in the movie theater? Because I saw it like two or three times. It's a three-hour movie. It's a three-hour delight is what it is. There were times during Interstellar, because Hans Zimmer did the score for that one too. That was a different director, Christopher Nolan. But still, the point is that it's these works, these epic films that are challenging the pace that we are used to. In listening to this film review with Mark Kermode, and that's a much better film review than some jackass from Detroit, like babbling into a microphone after having too many brews. Brews? What am I, 10? I don't think I've ever said the word brews. Anyway, Mark Kermode talks about how there's this exercise that film students do, and it's they clap every time there's an edit to in a movie, and you'll see that some of the older movies, if you listen to the claps, and it's kind of like, you know, that. But if you look at a modern thing, every time there's a scene change or edit, it's like this. You know, it's happening all the time. And you can see that in our commercials, our TV shows, everything. So the pace of this movie pulls you in. There were so many times where Ryan Gosling, beautiful, sexy Ryan Gosling, is just standing there stoically looking around, not saying anything, but the story and the music, it's like this growling industrial garbage sound, like a just slow moving, just eking out an existence, like almost like volcano lava, slowly. It's not going to get you right away. I mean, when it first explodes, it will, but I mean, once it's sort of just slowly moving its way through the landscape, it pulls you in, and slowly you start to get into the story, even if you didn't know what was happening. It's very clear what's happening. It's a great film, obviously, but I just mean in terms of the visuals and the sounds and sort of the poise that some of these characters have. It's intense, and there's a scene where he is checking into like a, I don't know if it's a hotel or if it's like some sort of front desk. Holy fuck, man. The design of this thing, it's like something carved out of stone. It's almost like Edward Hopper's a painting, you know, that like sort of cafe on the corner, but it's like a futuristic, cold, alien version of that. I just realized that. It's intense, man. And you're going to have to see the movie to know what I'm talking about. But going back to the idea of identity, because I think it's a big thing. Gosling thinks he's one thing, and he operates on that hope. He's hoping that he is that sort of golden child, so to speak, that he's the one. It's almost like a microcosm of how we behave in this country, isn't it? Like we think we're special. We think we've got that thing, man. We're just waiting to be discovered. Just wandering on the earth like, yeah, I'm going to my shift at Burger King, but you wait, motherfucker. 5 years from now, I'll be running that joint, and then 5 years after that, I will be on Jimmy Kimmel Live. Just watch for me. Stay tuned. You know, it's like that. And then when he finds out that he's not, he gets so angry. and he realizes that it was his sister, that he was like a decoy. And that's a huge identity change, to know, to think that you're one thing and then have everything sort of turned upside down. There are more interesting things, I think, at work here. There's so many layers to this, and one of them is that Ryan Gosling's character, which I think his name is Joe. I don't know what they refer to him at work. Like he's a replicant, basically, right? He's an android, or he thinks he's part human, but is he becoming part human? Because when you go back to the identity thing, he isn't programmed to question orders or to lie, but he does. And in fact, his boss, Robin Wright, still looking good, Princess Bride, she's at his place or in the office or whatever, having a drink, and she makes a pass at him, sort of, and he just is like, you know what, we should really go back to work. He's not supposed to be doing that. He's programmed. They programmed him. That's what she just should have said. Like, where are you going? I got you. I got you. I got you. You're programmed to do this. Do what I tell you. But he doesn't. He resists. And he lies. At the end of the movie, when he saves Harrison Ford from that sinking ship, and Harrison Ford says, you should have let me die out there. Maybe I was supposed to drown. And Ryan Gosling says, well, you did drown. He's saying he's going to lie when he goes back to his post and say, like, yeah, he's dead, to try and cover for him. That's not what a robot's supposed to do. Now you've got a robot thinking about lying, about feeling emotions, I guess. There's so many things to cover, things that I liked in this movie. The baseline tests were super interesting, I thought, where it's almost like an alignment for the mind. It's hard to figure out what's happening at first, but you understand that it's some sort of tune-up or coordination to make sure everything is in line. But very interesting, very scary to see what looks like a human but is actually what is not, do these sort of tests. And you imagine that the tests, if they were actually carried out by robots, would be a lot faster. A lot of things would be spit out, but you get the sense of what could be in the future through these. One of the most interesting things of the film, I thought, was sinking. If you remember, it's the sort of, I guess it's technically a menage à toi. No, he's got this hologram, right? And this plays into the idea of objectification. Is that how you say that? Objectifying things. In this case, it's a woman who's a hologram. Joy, like somebody, everybody has a joy. Just like in the movie Her, you can date an OS, basically. It's a hologram that moves around the room. And you can, if you're rich enough, you can upgrade to where you don't need the machine that will sort of shine the light. And you can take your joy or your man or your woman with you wherever you want. You're objectifying them, right? Because you have your fun with them. And you sort of carry on like they don't have an existence outside of you. So you're in total control. But in order to have any sort of physical contact with these things, which you can't, they had this thing called syncing, where Joy, Ryan Gosling's character's hologramhoneys.com, check it out, at hologramhoneys, she brought another girl in who was, that Ryan Gosling had met her on the street, like in a, like kind of a red light district, when you get the sense that he kind of was getting those humanistic urges, like he kind of wanted to maybe stick his dick into something and see how it felt. And the girl, Joy, kind of noticed that he liked talking to this girl. And so Joy contacted the girl somehow and brought her to the apartment. And I'm going to try to describe this as best I can. The woman, she wasn't a prostitute, she was just a girl, but I think, it doesn't matter. The girl was there, and the hologram girl, Joy, would sort of hover over the girl's body so that it looked like her, and sometimes it would get out of sync, so you'd see that it was the girl herself and not the hologram, but for the most part, it was almost like she went inside of this girl and changed shapes like a shapeshifter, which I thought was super fascinating. That's so interesting and weird, and it's going to be fucked up when that actually happens, that you're going to be able to, you're going to be fucking somebody and you're going to be like, ooh, you should put on Marianne Cotillard tonight. Put on a little Brad Pitt 1997 for me. And so it'll look like you're fucking that person. What I think is really interesting about this idea is that for who knows how long we've sort of felt like it sometimes can feel like it takes two people to make a complete person, a whole person, if you will. That's why people get married, right? That's why people date. They've got two incomes. They've got a backup in case you choke on a peanut and you need to get the Heimlich. I mean, let's face it. We all saw that Tina Fey 30 Rock episode. You got to have somebody there in case you choke on a peanut. Doesn't mean you have to have that. People are fine dying alone with peanuts in their throat hole. But there's this idea, maybe it's a myth, I don't know, that it takes two people to sort of be this super organism where you can get things done. Well, now with syncing, we're talking about three broken people that it takes. Very interesting development. We just upped ourselves by 50%, right? A whole other person? I'm not good at averages. I shouldn't say numbers. So I thought that was super, super interesting. Weird thing, probably something that's going to happen in the future. And let's see, what else do I got here? But another interesting thing about Joy, and this will probably be the last thing I'm going to say, because you need to see it, and then you need to tweet at me so we can talk about it, and maybe I can read some of your tweets on air the beginning of next episode, if you want, whatever. But Joy, the woman, was supposed to be just like Ryan Gosling and be this hologram, not real, you know, robotic, supposed to stay within the programming. But there's a scene where she clearly felt emotional for Joe when he crashed, and she sort of was worried about him, and so she got emotional to see if he was okay. And because she was trying to do something, comfort him outside of her programming, she shorted out. She short-circuited a little bit, and she got stuck in like a time loop. She kept moving like just in a little half a second, like a boomerang. You know what I'm saying? Like a boomerang. Which I thought was really fascinating, because here she is. She freezes up when she's trying to be more human. So, a lot of this film, even though the themes are clearly dystopia, what we did to this world, not just physically and environmentally, but like what we did to ourselves as humans. We created this breed of robots, these sentient beings. These beings that are able to fix themselves and think for themselves and figure things out and confront their maker. Very godlike. This is a huge fucking problem. Hello. I mean, it's these kind of movies, these dystopian futuristic movies. And by the way, I went jotting down notes for this. It says themes, and then it just says dystopian future, check. That's it. That's all it says. The whole page. That's all it says. It's succinct, right? You got to be concise. But when you see a great movie like this, for me anyway, it makes me feel like even more so that I should expect everyone to walk out of the movie theater and go, I'm not going to work tomorrow or ever, because fuck this. We've got bigger things to worry about. We've got robots. We don't even know what this is, man. And I'm not even going to go into one of those everyone should be looking up at the stars and wondering rants, because we should be. But we are, it feels like, looking at the finger that's pointing at the sky. Do you know what I mean? Look at the sky. That's where the answers lie. I'm going to stop rhyming, and I don't know why. Oh, Blade Runner 2049. I'm going to leave it at that because I want you to see it. I really want you to tweet at me, at ArtHouse43. Tell me the scenes that you liked. Tell me what you disagree with or like you agree with that I've said. And let's extrapolate. Is that the right word? I hate the word expand upon that, because expand upon that is like, it's kind of condescending a little bit. Could you expand upon that a little bit? Or it's just stupid. I don't know. Extrapolate, I'm not sure what it means. But anyway, the point is, message me, send me things, at ArtHouse43, let me know what you think. And remember, only you can stop the dystopian future. Only you. Thank you.